Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Necessary Roughness Podcast, episode number 110, presented by Last Word on Sports. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all are as excited as I am. Football is starting. Finally, real football. Not talking college football, not talking high school football, not talking preseason football. Regular season NFL football is less than 1 week away. And on today's episode, we're going to talk about that opening game between the Dallas Cowboys and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But first, we've got some news to shake through, some news and notes. And as promised, we're going to make our Super Bowl pick. We're going to give our preseason, end of preseason awards predictions. Now, we'll get into how accurate we've usually been. But like we said last week, and if you weren't here last week, thank you for joining us. We're going to be weekly throughout the season every Saturday afternoon. We talked about how last year we picked the Super Bowl. We almost picked it right. It wasn't exactly a knock your socks off kind of prediction. We picked the Chiefs and the Bucks from the outset, and we had Kansas City winning. We fudged that one up the season before. We had Kansas City and New Orleans with New Orleans winning. Fudged that one up. So we got Kansas City in there both times. Not exactly rocket science, but couldn't nail it from a handful of months out, from the Steph Curry range, so to speak. But before we get into that, we're going to get into an abbreviated version of the standout seven. We might only get through about 2 or 3 points, if we're being honest, before we get into the meat and potatoes of why you're here for this episode. But we got to discuss, number one, first and foremost, Cam Newton released by the New England Patriots. I'd be lying if I said it didn't kind of shock me. I think at the least, Cam Newton had value as a veteran backup, as a veteran presence. Maybe Bill Belichick tends to err on the side of, well, we want our guy to know he's our guy, but at the same time, it doesn't really seem like the kind of kid gloves that Bill Belichick would use to handle a situation like this. Maybe it's a new era, new time. Maybe he saw what happened with Tua Tagovailoa in Miami. Maybe he talked to Brian Flores, who, you know, has some ties to him, and Brian felt, well, if we didn't have a guy knocking the door down right behind him, he would have played better. All right, Brian, well, I'll take your word for it, and I'll let the former MVP go. Cam Newton, we talked about it last year. I didn't think he played great for the New England Patriots. 7-8 in his starts. You're talking about 8 passing touchdowns, 10 interceptions. You're talking about under 200 yards passing a game. You take a look at the rushing. I mean, it was still there. Most he's ran for since 2017, you know, 590 yards on 137 carries, which feels like a lot of carries. That's the most carries he's had ever in his, since the 2017 season, second most ever in his career. 12 touchdowns on the ground. Even if you add in the 12 touchdowns, we're looking at 20 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, which makes it look a little bit better. But if you're adding in the touchdowns, you have to add in the fumbles, 6 fumbles as well. It just wasn't really a fit, I don't think. I don't think the team ever really clicked, and we're talking about a team that is in a building year. And as much as I said in the AFC preview episode that for some reason I just had a feeling they were going to overachieve this year, because that's what the New England Patriots usually do, it had more to do with the addition of guys like Jonnu Smith on the offensive side and, you know, Nelson Agholor, who knows if he's going to continue his kind of rise from the ashes. A guy that was cast away by the Philadelphia Eagles, former USC receiver, of course. This offense should be better, especially with Mac Jones at the helm, because of, I mean, you can kind of go back to some of the things they used to. I'm not saying he's Tom Brady, but in terms of skill set, he's a lot closer to Brady than Cam Newton is, in my opinion. You can go back to some of that stuff with Jonnu Smith coming in and Hunter Henry. You can go to a 2 tight end set a little bit more. And when were the Patriots at their best? When they were running that dominant 2 tight end set with that guy that plays down in Tampa Bay, the other guy that plays down in Tampa Bay, and the other guy that we don't really need to talk about, if you know what I'm saying. Wink, wink. Either way, it was shocking for me that Cam was released. I think Cam has a place in the NFL. I mean, let's be honest here. If Robert Griffin can have consistent work as a backup quarterback, then why can't Cam Newton? Does Robert Griffin work harder than Cam Newton? I don't know. I haven't heard that Cam Newton's a slacker from any of his coaches and former teammates. I haven't heard that Cam Newton is anything but a guy that is liked by his teammates. I think he's got more in the tank than Bob Griffin. That's not Bob Griffin's fault necessarily, but we saw what happened with the injuries in Washington when they were under their old name, of course, and they were a playoff team, you know, prior to him going down. So the question becomes, where does he fit? There were murmurs that he might wind up in a place like Dallas as the backup QB. Obviously, that hasn't panned out as of yet. It's intriguing to me that they would consider it, obviously, with everything with Dak Prescott's health. I think it might be a smart move to invest a little bit in a backup QB. We're talking about a team last year that was running Andy Dalton out there. Dalton, who's now going to be at least a temporary starter in Chicago. So I think that might be a good investment, but that's just me. Let me know what you guys think in the comments section, if there is a comments section where you're listening, or on social media, all social media, at Nick Donadic. Name just how I spell it in the description, NikDonadic. Number two in the standout seven, something I didn't want to talk about, and we did this last week a little bit. We have to dive into some of these things, referring to the kind of, you know, shenanigans sort involving the vaccination status of players perhaps impacting their cuts. Urban Meyer initially said, per Adam Schefter, it was considered, it being the vaccination status of the players, because of the more stringent COVID protocols imposed on unvaccinated players who test positive or are identified as a high-risk close contact compared with the protocols for vaccinated players. Now, of course, we've already seen an example of this. We saw a vaccinated trainer test positive for COVID-19, and Cole Beasley have at least 5 days away from the team because he is unvaccinated and he was a close contact. Did he wind up testing positive? I don't believe so. Correct me if I'm wrong. But don't believe he wound up testing positive. However, he was given that close contact thing. And then, of course, as we discussed with Isaiah McKenzie being fined because he didn't wear his mask, and then he promptly went and got vaccinated simply so he wouldn't have to lighten his pockets every time he was a little bit lax with his face mask. This is intriguing to me, and I tend to think this is more of a labor issue. And, you know, we don't delve into stuff like this super duper often, as I mentioned, but it's really intriguing for a litany of reasons, but mostly because of the way the union and the NFL usually interact. Very combative, you know, in most sports leagues, if we're being completely honest, save for maybe the NBA when they had the one lockout shortened year, but usually they're on decent terms. We've seen it with Major League Baseball. We've seen it with the NFL as well. The union will fight for anyone and everyone. That's their job. And usually they will go as hard as possible for their members. I think it's intriguing that we haven't seen them push back a little harder. Maybe somebody got to Urban Meyer. They said they walked back from that. They asked Bill Belichick if it played a role in Cam Newton being cut because he was unvaccinated. He said no. I'm going to call shenanigans on Bill. I'm not saying he did it because he was unvaccinated, but you remember Cam Newton, I believe, missed a COVID test and then had to miss practices, and then there was all those reports about, look at how good Mac Jones looks playing with the ones. That wouldn't have happened if Cam Newton was a vaccinated player. Bill can say it didn't factor in. Bill can say, we've had all these breakthrough cases with vaccinated players. Doesn't make a difference to me. It is what it is, Bill. I'm just saying that would not have happened if Cam Newton were a vaccinated player. Wouldn't have had to miss as much time. Wouldn't have had as much time for you to be quote-unquote impressed by Mac Jones. Just food for thought. Another one in here, just talking about some free agent players that are still available. And this is intriguing because we're pushing upon the start of the NFL season, and there are some name brands in here. There really are. Obviously, some of them aging to the point where you wonder if they can still give it a go. Some of these are injury-related. Some of these are related to some off-the-field things. Just thought we'd rattle off a couple of names and, you know, wonder where they might wind up. A guy like Cam Newton, as we just discussed. Mitchell Schwartz is on here. David DeCastro, who last we heard was battling an ankle injury. Richard Sherman, who last we saw was, you know, in a video that wasn't so flattering as he was trying to beat somebody's door down. Le'Veon Bell, still on the right side of 30 for a little while here. Kind of intriguing that he didn't find his way into somebody's running back room. Kenny Stills, still listed as a free agent here. The, you know, ageless wonder, Larry Fitzgerald. Obviously, the only place I could see him going back would be Arizona, but as we'll get into my picks, I think Arizona's going to have a pretty good year. You don't wonder, could he come back and try and get a ring on the way out just for a participation trophy? Todd Gurley, who we talked about a lot last year. Todd Gurley, and if you remember a few years ago, if you were around, thank you, first of all, I was really high on the LA Rams making their run, and a lot of that was predicated on Todd Gurley. And Todd Gurley started having the late in the season sort of knee issues, and I'm using as many layers of air quotes as I can. Last year, we saw Todd come back and rush for 678 yards for the Falcons, which is down from his total the year before. He hasn't been over 4 yards a carry since the 2018 season. However, there were spurts last year where I said, oh, look, that's Todd Gurley. He looks like Todd Gurley. And you wonder why the Atlanta Falcons didn't consider bringing him back. You tend to think they would know more about his health status than anyone else currently. Right now, they're going with Mike Davis, Cordarrelle Patterson, and Keith Smith per the team website. And, I mean, that's just not a running back room that inspires confidence, if I'm being honest. Nothing against Mike Davis. Mike Davis has been a fairly competent role player running back. You know, 500 yards for Seattle a couple years ago, 600 yards last year in Carolina, filling in for McCaffrey. Higher yards per carry last year from him than Todd Gurley. So maybe it's an upgrade. I don't really consider it one. It's intriguing to me. There was a rumor per, I believe, Ian Rappaport that Todd Gurley has interest in becoming a Raven. I could see it. I mean, it's a run-first team. You can never have enough running backs. They've had injury issues in that backfield, obviously, with Dobbins going down for the year. Some more interesting guys on this list. Danny Amendola, is he officially retired? I don't know. Damon Harrison, who came back seemingly out of nowhere to play. Prince Amukamara, is there anything left in the tank there for him? Former New York Giant for a relatively high draft pick. I last remember him with the Chicago Bears, but I think he might have got a cup of coffee somewhere else as well. Tyler Eifert, who's had his career kind of riddled with injuries, was in Jacksonville, didn't really impress a super amount, if I remember correctly. So there's a lot of guys still out there, and you just start to wonder where they'll fill in. We talked about Cam potentially filling in a backup role for a team with a mobile QB. I doubt we'd see him in a place like Miami, where they just got rid of Ryan Fitzpatrick, because Tua seemed to at least be looking over his shoulder a little bit, getting bailed out when he wasn't. Gurley would be a good fit anywhere they need running backs, and every team needs running backs. So you tend to wonder, is he pricing himself out? Does he want to be a starter? Is no one interested? Are his knees that bad? These are all shots in the dark. Maybe none of them are true. Maybe all of them are true. I don't know. I doubt he's pricing himself out. If he went to Atlanta last year on a one-year deal, coming off of, you know, this is a guy that was an MVP candidate when he was at his peak. All right, now before we get into our end-of-year award predictions and our Super Bowl pick, let's go through the news and notes, and then once we're done here, boom, we'll be ready to get into it. Obviously, as I mentioned, Dobbins, done for the year. For, I believe it at first was listed as an ACL injury, but then I saw some reports saying that it was related to his Achilles. The latest reports that I can find do say that J.K. Dobbins, obviously fantastic rookie from last year, with an ACL. So perhaps I saw a false report when they were saying it was an Achilles. That would have been much worse, especially for a young running back who looked like he was very promising. Looked very good even at Ohio State, obviously. Ndamukong Suh to the COVID IL, which is going to be a big thing. We're going to talk Buccaneers-Cowboys later. It'd be a big thing not to have him in the middle of that defense when they take on the Cowboys. Obviously, the Cowboys' biggest strength is going to be Zeke Elliott. We don't know what Dak's going to have in his first game back. Are they going to be airing it out? Is he going to be on a little bit of a conservative sort of game plan here? But Ndamukong Suh in the middle, one of the better interior defensive linemen over the course of the last, you know, decade, would certainly help. But we'll see if he makes it off the COVID IL in time for that game. And just an open thought here. So Dobbins goes down in the final preseason game. We saw the New York Giants have some, you know, injuries here and there with Darius Slayton, who was their rising star wideout from last year. Might be a little heavy to call him a rising star, but one of their breakout players, and last year of his contract, tight end Evan Ingram, who's been rather disappointing, also wound up nicked up in that final game. I wonder if we're going to have a new policy from teams on the preseason. Now, I'm of the opinion that we're going to wind up with 18 regular season games. It's what the owners want, and it's going to make money, so it is what it is. So if you wind up with two preseason games, how's it going to work? In the four preseason game format, we saw barely starters, maybe a drive or two in the first game. We didn't really see them play close to a half until the third game. The fourth game, they usually didn't play much at all. So the fourth game they got rid of, so they were treating it as so. The third game was still the third game. The starters were playing, and here we have the injuries relatively close to the beginning of the regular season, which is concerning. Are we going to see them shift their third game approach back to the second game, maybe? Are we going to see it even less playing time for starters in the preseason? And I would feel bad for the fans in that case, because, you know, I'm a fan, and I was young at one point. Me and my father used to go to preseason games over at Giants Stadium. We used to go to Giants-Jets, and it was fun to watch. You get to see the stars for a while. You get to see some guys you never heard of who might be impact players this year or the year is coming. It's kind of interesting, because you'd assume with a league like this, and it's more so in other sports like baseball where everything's so analytic, right? And it's kind of pushing its way into the NFL. There's going to be some risk management involved in how much do we play these guys, where can we afford... Week one, week two, we might be a little rusty, but at least we know they're playing in the games that matter. J.K. Dobbins going down in a preseason game, we've seen a lot of people say, and including, I believe, came out of his camp a little bit, that it's very disappointing for a litany of reasons, and it's also, obviously it's rough luck, but it's a bad look, so to speak. I think that's a little harsh, considering, I mean, he's a second-year running back. It's a fluke injury, you wind up with a knee injury, but either way, just thought I'd put that out there and give you guys some food for thought. Harrison Smith, an extension from the Minnesota Vikings, one of their better players. I tend to think he'd be a guy that they'd want to keep on for the duration of his career, in my opinion. T.Y. Hilton to the injured reserve. He's going to be out some time. We talked about that last week. Stephon Gilmore on the physically unable to perform list. David Bakhtiari of the Packers, also on that list. Mike Thomas of the Saints, also on that list. Carson Wentz got over being on the COVID IL, and he's back now. And then there was a little bit of a weird press conference when they were asking him about his vaccination status. I think we need to get past that. And by we, I mean the media. I mean, the guy's rehabbing a foot injury anyway. It is what it is. And at the end of the day, he's making a decision about his health. Come on now. What are we doing here? The Green Bay-New Orleans game, which obviously we're not going to pick until next week. Next Saturday is going to be our Week 1 preview special. All the teams obviously going to be in action that Sunday and Monday. That game's going to be in Jacksonville, obviously because of the circumstances of Hurricane Ida hitting in Louisiana. And we here at Last Word on Sports, and I know personally, are praying for everyone down there. Obviously, you see the photos, you see the videos, they're underwater. It's awful. It really is, and it's a shame. And we're hoping that everyone down there can rebound as best they can from those damages and hopefully, you know, just try to survive. So we wish you all nothing but the best. That'll take us into the most important part of the show. No, we're not picking the season opener yet, but we are giving away our playoff picks. Now, for a reminder, our division winners... And we'll start in the conference of the championship loser. We had the Kansas City Chiefs winning the West, the Titans winning the South, the Bills in the East, and the Ravens in the North. Wildcard teams in descending order had the Indianapolis Colts as the top wildcard spot, the Cleveland Browns in the second wildcard spot, and the Pittsburgh Steelers in the third wildcard spot. I had the Chargers just missing behind them. I think they're going to have a good year. I was intrigued by the Patriots, couldn't take the leap. Intrigued by the Raiders, couldn't take the leap. I think the Chargers are a better team this year. So, in the American Football Conference, how does it shake out? Well, I have the Kansas City Chiefs getting that first round bye. I have the Titans in the 2 seed, and here's the reason. Now, you might say, oh, wow, what a big pick. Calm down. The reason I have the Chiefs edging out the Titans is because the Titans are going to have to play the NFC West, which means the Titans are going to have to go to LA to play the Rams and to Seattle to play the Seahawks, as well as facing the Cardinals and Niners at home. The Chiefs, on the other hand, are going to have to go face the WFT and Philly on the road and face the New York Football Giants and the Cowboys at home. It's intriguing to me that they get the Cowboys at home. That's the biggest one. That's the best team in the division. That's a big distinction. So because of that division versus division flop here, I couldn't go out on a limb and take the Titans. I thought about the Ravens. This season, the AFC North is going to be taking on the NFC North. So the fact that they're going to have to go take on the Packers, take on the Vikings, Lions and Bears, whatever. I thought about them maybe jumping over the Titans even. But right now, Chiefs number one, Titans number two, Ravens at three, Bills at four. And as a reminder, Colts five, Browns six, Steelers seven. That would set up first round matchups in the wild card weekend between the Tennessee Titans and the Pittsburgh Steelers, which I would have Tennessee winning, the Baltimore Ravens and the Cleveland Browns, which would be fun, honestly, which I'd have Baltimore winning, a lot of chalk, I know, and the Buffalo Bills and the Indianapolis Colts. Now, may I remind you, Indianapolis Colts head coach is whom? Frank Reich. Frank Reich, famously quarterback in the big comeback game. What was it, 31-3? No, sorry, I'm thinking of the Patriots and the Falcons, but it was it not? I'm trying to remember the score of that game. It's the most famous. It was 28-3 Oilers, and then Jim Kelly, obviously, you know, was being filled in for by Frank Reich, and they wound up, it was 35-3, and then Buffalo did what became history and won that game. So I think it'd be kind of cool to see him facing against the Bills, and this game would be in Buffalo. I would take the Bills in this one. We're going to talk about the awards, and I'm going to tell you my thoughts on Carson Wentz this year, but with him literally already have been injured and facing coming back from the foot injury, I'm a little shaken on my convictions on this Indianapolis Colts team. I still think they're good enough with their running game, the offensive line, and the defense to piece it together to be a playoff team. And we've seen Buffalo have some weird ones. We saw the Bills play the Texans a couple years ago, and neither team looked like they wanted to win. Is this the year Josh Allen continues that? He took a huge step forward last year. Can he take an even bigger step forward this year? Is that possible? Can they get over the hump and, I don't know, make it to the Super Bowl? I don't know, but I have them winning their first round game, which takes us into the divisional weekend. We have Kansas City taking on the Buffalo Bills at Arrowhead, and we have Tennessee taking on the Ravens. So I have this setting up a Chiefs-Ravens AFC Championship game, which I'm sure would be very, very fun, and exactly what the network that is hosting this, I believe it'd be CBS, it's usually CBS, would exactly want. It's two of the biggest stars in the game, two of the bright young quarterback stars, who really are the faces that we need at the quarterback position, and we, I mean the NFL, as they try to eventually transition out of the Brady era, which seems to never end. Not hating on Tom Brady, obviously Super Bowl champion, greatest quarterback of all time, but the man can't play forever no matter how much he wants to. So Chiefs, Ravens. Now we're going to jump to the NFC. You might say, whoa. You got to finish the AFC first. No. We're going to set up championship weekend, and then we'll get into it. We'll pick those games, then we'll do the Super Bowl. So in the NFC, I have the defending champions as the one seed. You might say, why do you have the defending champions as the one seed? Well, they play the AFC East. It's just that simple for me. The Bucs have the best team in the AFC East, Buffalo coming down to them. I think that's going to matter. In the number two spot, however, in the AFC, I have the Arizona Cardinals. Yeah, I have the Cardinals not only winning their division, I have the Cardinals putting on so much of a showing that they are going to be the two seed in the league. They take on the AFC South, by the way. Jaguars, Titans, Texans, Colts. Two of those presumably should be free wins, potentially three. Might be able to win all four, you never know. I think it'd be quite a matchup against the Titans. Looking forward to that game. So I have the Cardinals in the two seed, the Green Bay Packers, led by Aaron Rodgers, perhaps for the last time, in at the three, the Dallas Cowboys at the four. My wild card teams, I fought with this one. I really did, because as I mentioned, I have two teams coming out of the NFC West. That's right, as I said, and they're facing lower level, you know, Jaguars, Texans should be two free wins for these playoff teams. But with that in mind, the NFC South is also facing, you know, the Cowboys, the Giants, the Washington football team, and the Philadelphia Eagles. So where do I want to put the Saints in there? I wound up splitting the difference and saying the Rams would be my 5 seed, the Saints at 6, and the Seattle Seahawks at 7. So that opens up for a playoff matchup between two division rivals immediately. The Arizona Cardinals hosting the Seattle Seahawks. Now, I think this would be really interesting to see Kyler Murray, who's not exactly cut from the cloth of Russell Wilson as a smaller mobile quarterback, but you can make some comps there. I think Kyler Murray is more of an explosive runner than Russell was. Russell was very elusive, and I think Kyler's got some of that in him. But I think Kyler's got a little bit more explosiveness and speed than Russell did, especially as Russell's getting a little bit older. However, I do think Russell's a better passer. I don't really think that's debatable, but we'll get into what I think of Kyler Murray's performance later this year. And it's interesting, because if you remember, people were real high on Kyler, and I was kind of the one downplaying it. But with the things they've built around him, and the way the defense has improved for this team, bringing in a guy like J.J. Watt, and obviously the acquisition of DeAndre Hopkins last year, another year of chemistry for them, I'm pretty high on them, to the point where I have them beating Seattle to move on to the divisional weekend. Packers-Saints, I think that'd be a fantastic matchup. I think Drew Brees would be salivating from his home. However, I have this game in Lambeau, so I have the Packers winning this one. Cowboys and Rams is an interesting one for me for a couple of reasons. I think the Cowboys on paper are probably a little better, offensively at least, especially losing Gerald Everett. The Rams always seem to run into injuries on the offensive side of the ball as well in terms of their skill position players. But, and this might sound foolish, I think the Rams will win this game because I think Matthew Stafford will get revenge for that weird Lions-Cowboys game that the referees kind of helped the Cowboys win oh so long ago. And I think they'll win this one, and I think they'll come out and win this one for Matt, and I think obviously Aaron Donald is a bit of a nuisance in the middle of that line, which should help him out. And I do think Matthew Stafford's going to have a darn good year, and I think him and Sean McVay are going to be able to pull together a little bit of a run here. So that brings us to the divisional weekend. We've got the Bucks hosting the Rams and the Cardinals hosting the Packers. I've got the high seeds winning. It's a little boring, but it's the way it is. I like the Rams. I like what they can do, but I don't think they're good enough to beat this Buccaneers team. Returning all their starters, defending champions, I just don't. Cardinals-Packers, I think, would be quite an interesting one. I think this one, and it's, you know, a rematch of the legendary overtime game with Kurt Warner and Rodgers from oh so long ago, but I'm picking my team to go all the way. I'm not a Cardinal fan. I'm a Giants fan. You know that. But I'm picking my sweetheart to go all the way. You remember last year, I had the Broncos in the playoffs, and I thought about making them go a little bit further. And then we had some of those things. You fall in love with your Cinderella pick, but at the end of the day last year, I wound up picking Chiefs-Bucks in the Super Bowl, and the year before I picked Chiefs-Saints. I'll take my Cinderella to get this far, but I can't take the Rams to advance, and I don't think I can take the Packers to beat the Cardinals in this one. After what I saw last year in the NFC Championship game, I wasn't really too excited, and you remember, if you listened, I was kind of outraged for Packer fans with the way that game ended. With the field goal, with the decision for Rodgers not to try and run it in. Him not running it in is Cam Newton not diving on the ball in the Super Bowl. It's a moment that, look, I think it might haunt him. I really do. Legacy-wise, Rodgers could retire tomorrow. They'll probably throw him in the Hall of Fame, and, you know, you can make the argument rightfully so. But against the GOAT, at your place, you're not going to try and force that one in there? All right, well, the GOAT's going to wind up winning. The GOAT's going to go to the Super Bowl, and his GOAT's going to do what he's going to do. Bucks-Cardinals in the NFC Championship. Chiefs-Ravens in the AFC Championship. We got a good one. Either way. Either we wind up with a Chiefs-Bucks rematch. Not going to be mad at that because last year wasn't that great. Maybe it'll deliver this time. You might wind up with Ravens-Cardinals, in which case linebackers better get their cardio in because they're going to be running all over the field chasing these QBs down in the Super Bowl. You might get Ravens-Bucks, complete mismatch of, you know, quarterback skill sets. Lamar Jackson, one of the most dynamic, athletic QBs ever. Perhaps Michael Vick-ish might be more athletic than Vick, might have a better career than Vick, depending on how things play out. And Tom Brady's Tom Brady. The other way around, Kyler Murray and his boys and DeAndre Hopkins, star power. Patrick Mahomes and his boys, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, star power. Let's start in the AFC. Chiefs-Ravens matchups that I've seen, I've usually wound up leaning in favor of the Kansas City Chiefs. Will there be a Super Bowl hangover this year? Well, there wasn't a Super Bowl hangover after they won it because they almost repeated, and almost means they got there. Obviously, the game is what it is. But will this be a year that the Ravens take this step forward? If I got to pick this game a week ago and J.K. Dobbins was healthy, I might have picked the Ravens. However, I'm going to pick Kansas City to go to the Super Bowl for the third consecutive year. Now, on the other end, the Buccaneers and the Cardinals. Will someone take Brady down in a championship game? Remember, this game would be in Tampa. Will Kyler Murray and the Cardinals do enough to take out Tom Brady? Or will it come down to the guys that I might be putting into conversation for comeback player of the year on the defensive side of the ball for the Cardinals? You know, it feels corny to pick the same matchup back-to-back years, so I'll take the Cardinals to go all the way to the Super Bowl. I feel a little forced into this decision by my own conscience. I don't want to pick the same matchup back-to-back years. I'm not Chris Berman in the 90s. Love you, Boomer, wherever you are. But as much as, I mean, look, that game disappointed me. I want to see it again. I want to see a better version. But I'm going to take this streaking Cardinals team. And that's the thing. At the end of the day, you got to pick based on what you've already done. You know what I mean? If I'm picking this Cardinals team to be a 2 seed, this team's going to be darn good. They really are. And as we take a look at the Cardinals depth chart, like we were discussing last week, there is room for that. Adding A.J. Green on the outside. I'm still floating the idea of a Tony Gonzalez-ish middle-of-the-year kind of comeback, which was always floated for him with the Falcons. D-Hop on one side, A.J. Green on the other, the speed of Christian Kirk and Andy Isabella. Do I think they can get better production from the tight end position? I do. I really do. Will that come this year? I don't know. The addition of James Conner in the backfield, will he help give them solid production from the running back position? I'm not sure. I'm not super high on him or Chase Edmonds, but you combine the two, maybe we got something. A pass rush that includes Chandler Jones on one side and J.J. Watt on the other. Isaiah Simmons in the linebacker position, along with the athleticism of the young Zaven Collins. Marcus Golden and Devon Kennard on this team, an outside linebacker. I'm not super sold on Robert Alford and Byron Murphy in the secondary. I'm going to be completely honest, but I've seen teams that don't have the best secondary, or didn't have the best secondaries, I should say, beat Tom Brady-led teams. It was a front seven effort, and maybe in this case a front seven effort will be enough to take down the Golden Boy in his house, his new house, his pirate ship? His part two pirate ship, if you will, and send them to the Super Bowl. So we have Chiefs-Cardinals. Chiefs, the higher seed, coming off a bye. The Cardinals, the 2 seed, coming off a road against a division rival in Seattle. Against the Green Bay Packers, beating Russell Wilson, beating Aaron Rodgers, beating Tom Brady. Can they then beat Patrick Mahomes? Well, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't. And the reason I don't think so comes down to what I just mentioned, and it's that secondary. I don't know. And look, I get it. You know, it's easier said than done. Oh, it's just Tyreek Hill and Kelce. Well, you can't double-team everyone, guys. You can't. And we're talking about a backfield with Edwards-Helaire, Darrell Williams, and now Jerick McKinnon, where maybe the running game's going to be just as dominant as it was a few years ago for them. Back even in the Kareem Hunt days, this was a running team first. If the running game comes back, Orlando Brown helping to shore up that left side of the line again, new additions, Tyreek Hill, Byron Pringle. They got a lot of role players in this receiver room, which I'm not super high on, but I'm not low on them either. They're guys that come in here and there. They lose Sammy Watkins, which is not small, but I like Mecole Hardman. I think he could step up and fill in the gaps for a Sammy Watkins. You take a look at Sammy Watkins' numbers as a Chief. We're talking 37 catches, 400 yards last year. 52 catches, 670 yards the year before. Not exactly knock your socks off numbers. The guy hasn't been a 1,000-yard receiver since 2015. Now, he might be fantastic in Baltimore. Who knows? Maybe it'll be a career renaissance. His first 2 years in the league, he was at 980 and then 1,000. And he just hasn't come close since. He hasn't pushed over 700 yards at all. I don't know. I'm taking Kansas City. Is it Arizona being there a year too soon? Perhaps. Is it Andy Reid and the Chiefs going on a war path and getting their revenge? Remind you, this playoff run that I have them on, they would beat Buffalo, and then they would beat Baltimore. I don't know. It's an interesting one. You can make the argument maybe Baltimore pulls it out, running the ball, just keeping Mahomes off the field. They haven't been able to do that yet. I got to see it to believe it. Maybe when I'm picking the game in January, I'll pick differently. Right now, as we sit, I have the Kansas City Chiefs winning this year's Super Bowl. MVP, who cares for the Super Bowl? Mahomes, I guess. I don't know. We'll find that out when we get there. But right now, I have them as my champion. Let's get into the awards segment. Now, as we take a look at last year's awards, I'll remind you who I picked and who won. I had the MVP, Russell Wilson. It went to Aaron Rodgers. I had Tre'Davious White as the Defensive Player of the Year. That did not happen at all. It went to Aaron Donald. Again, Offensive Player of the Year, I had DeAndre Hopkins. It went to Derrick Henry. You take a look, though, and some of the guys I picked didn't have bad years. DeAndre Hopkins is incapable of having a bad year. We're talking about 1,400 receiving yards, 115 catches. Like, come on, man. How much more can I, sort of predict this man to have? Derrick Henry kind of ran for 2,000 yards. Oh, okay. Well, when you put it that way. Offensive Rookie of the Year, I had Joe Burrow. Obviously, he went down with an injury. It goes to Justin Herbert. Defensive Rookie of the Year, hey, we got one right. Chase Young. Comeback Player of the Year, I had Cam Newton. I thought he would have a pretty good year for New England. I did. Unfortunately, that's not the case, as we discussed earlier. It went to Alex Smith, who came back from his leg injury and all that. Coach of the Year, you might laugh, I had Vic Fangio. I thought Denver was going to be great. It was Kevin Stefanski of the Cleveland Browns. So this year, my Coach of the Year, based on the things you just heard, shouldn't shock you, I have Cliff Kingsbury. I have Cliff Kingsbury of the Arizona Cardinals winning Coach of the Year, because I have the Cardinals being a 2-seed and vying for a 1-seed for a lot of this season. I think there will be some votes, if this all shakes out the way I projected, there may be some votes for Mike Vrabel, also a 2-seed in there. There will also probably be some votes for the head coach of a team like the New Orleans Saints, coming off of their Hall of Fame quarterback retiring and still making the postseason. Might be a little impressive, you never know. But I've got to go into Kingsbury. Comeback Player of the Year, like I said, you asked me a couple of weeks ago, this would have been Carson Wentz for me, hands down. I think Carson Wentz is going to have a good year in Indy, but now we have T.Y. Hilton on IR for the first few weeks. We have him coming back from a foot injury. We have Quentin Nelson coming back from a foot injury. And then it leaves me on the fence wondering, well, I'm high on Arizona. I wind up diving into this spot where, okay, well, would it be a guy like Chandler Jones, who we talked about last week? Chandler Jones, who is coming off a season where, usually a guy who's very productive, he played just 5 games and he had just 1 sack. The year before, he had 19 sacks. He was on a streak of 5 consecutive seasons, 10-plus sacks. 19 sacks in 2019. Do I have him returning to that form? Would that be enough for him to get the award? The guy that I always talk about, J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt, 5 sacks in 2020, played every game. 2019, he played half the season, he had 4 sacks. Can he win Comeback Player of the Year? I don't know. I'm on the fence. I really am. I think I would give it to Watt, going to be entering his age 32 season. Got to keep that in mind. Chandler Jones going to be entering his age 31 season. We're splitting hairs at that point. I think I'm going to go with who I was going to go with weeks ago. I'm not very confident in this pick, but I'm going to go with Carson Wentz because I think even if he doesn't have a 2017 year that he had where he threw for 3,300, 33 touchdowns, 7 picks, the team was fantastic. I think with what's happened with his stock, you could make the argument he'd be that guy. Realistically, if I had to put money on it, I'd probably sooner go J.J. Watt. Not because Chandler Jones won't have a better year, but because Chandler Jones, coming off of 1 year of injury, J.J. Watt's always battling injuries. On top of the fact that Watt is just a bigger name. It is. That's what it comes down to sometimes, folks. That really is. You know, at the end of the day, I think I'd probably put my money on Watt under my head, but I'll go with Wentz because I'm confident in Carson. Go to the Rookies of the Year. Defensive Rookie of the Year is an interesting one because I like Micah Parsons a lot for the Dallas Cowboys, but I'm going to go with Greg Rousseau. You might say, Greg Rousseau? What team is Greg Rousseau on? Greg Rousseau was a late first-round selection by the Buffalo Bills. Defensive end out of Miami. So I think Greg's stepping into a good situation where he could come in and contribute and, you know, walk his way into a decent amount of sacks here and just have a good year for a team that people are going to be watching with a hawk eye because they burst onto the scene last year and they want to see if it was a fluke or not. Now, Offensive Rookie of the Year is a little bit more of an intriguing one for me. And the reason for that is we saw last year that Justin Jefferson might have been one of the best rookie receivers of all time. 1,400 receiving yards, 7 touchdowns as a rookie. But when push came to shove, even on this show, we had no choice but to reward Justin Herbert. The guy went 6-9, right? But in those games, he threw 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 4,300 yards. Might be one of the best rookie QB performances of all time. So when it comes down to QB versus skill position player, it seems that the award will go to a quarterback. So with that being said, my initial high candidate was the guy that everyone's been high on since he declared for the draft, tight end Kyle Pitts, who went number 4 to the Atlanta Falcons. Highest tight end selection in the NFL draft ever. 2020 John Mackey Award winner. Best tight end in the country for college football. However, my other candidate, because I know it's got to be a quarterback sometimes, is Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson of the New York Jets. The Jets have a little bit more around him than Sam Darnold had. New coaching staff. I mean, there are some people projecting this team to win 8 or 9 games. So if this team wins 9 games with Zach Wilson at the helm, he might be the Rookie of the Year by default. I'm going to go with Kyle Pitts because, you know, I think Kyle Pitts is going to have a darn good year for the Atlanta Falcons. They're still going to be airing the ball out down there, and I think Pitts is going to be quite the contributor along with Calvin Ridley blossoming into a number one. That being said, it wouldn't shock me if it went to Wilson. Now, my Offensive Player of the Year might be a little bit predictable based on who I projected in the standings and to go to the Super Bowl is Kyler Murray. Now, you might be saying, hold the phone, Nick. Didn't you project Kyler Murray to win an award before? I believe I did. Couldn't find it in my records, but I think I had him projected to win an award before. He wound up winning the Rookie of the Year, obviously. He's been a one-time Pro Bowler already. Last year, 26 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Completion percentage went up. Attempts went up, obviously. They went 8-8, and he was nicked up in that final game. And it was kind of concerning. Passer rating went up 8 points. QBR went up 11 points. And the thing that puts him above some of these other guys last year, he ran for 800 yards and 11 touchdowns. If he can run for somewhere between what he did his rookie year and his last year, it would put him at like 650-ish rushing yards and 7 or 8 touchdowns. If the passing touchdowns keep going up, we're looking at a guy that's accounting for north of 4,000 yards easily. This was on a 16-game schedule. He might account for 5,000 yards. On top of the fact that he was already accounting for 37 touchdowns last year, he might pass the 40 touchdown mark. That's big. Big. Now, you might say, that's an MVP season. This is a guy that's on a a two seed? That's an MVP season. How is he not your MVP? Well, the reason he's not my MVP, and we will skip Defensive Player of the Year for a second. The reason he's not my MVP is because I have King Henry breaking the single-season rushing record. And you take a look. I mean, look, this isn't a hot take, right? This guy almost broke the record in 16 games. Well, now there are 17 games. Now, you might say, look, Nick, this is kind of ridiculous. There's no way he's going to get 2,000 yards in back-to-back seasons. Like, look, Adrian Peterson couldn't do it, and he's Adrian Peterson. He went from 2,097 down to 1,266. Well, first of all, he was injured, but you're correct. However, this Titans team, which, by the way, I mentioned, I almost had as a two-seed, or rather, I had as a two-seed almost a one-seed. This Titans team acquired Julio Jones, one of the best receivers of the last decade, one of the best receivers of all time. So their offense is going to be different. There's going to be less pressure on Derrick Henry, which means you can't stack the box as much. Look, I'm not going to make the projection that all of a sudden Ryan Tannehill is going to throw 40 touchdowns, but with teams having to account for Julio Jones, who I think still has some left in the tank, I think it's going to open up some yards for Derrick, and I think adding another game means Derrick Henry is going to break the single-season rushing record. Now, you could say, hey, Nick, that's a Colin Coward-level projection. Like, oh, okay, Tom Brady's going to throw for 75 touchdowns. Like, look, come on. Cut me some slack here. This is, you know, a decent shot. This is a team that has improved their passing game, so they're going to be passing a little bit more, which means defenses are going to have to react to it. There's only two ways this plays out. Well, technically three. If Julio gets hurt, all bets are off. But there's only two ways this plays out. Either teams have to react to that passing game, or Tannehill and Julio are going to have really good years, which they might have anyway. Tannehill would have a career year. And if that's not the case, and they start to back those safeties off and lighten the box a little bit, you're going to put the ball in the tummy of Derrick Henry, and he's going to bulldoze for 6 yards before anyone touches him. And if he's got 6 yards of acceleration going, it's going to be hard to drag this guy down. Give me Derrick Henry to win the NFL MVP award. Defensive Player of the Year is another interesting one. Last year, the Defensive Player of the Year was the phenomenal Aaron Donald. Now, Aaron Donald last year had 13.5 sacks, far cry from his 20.5, but still one of the better interior defensive linemen, and they shift him around, one of the better defensive linemen, period, in the NFL. Period. You're talking about 13.5 sacks, as I said, 4 forced fumbles, 1 fumble recovery, stuff like that. However, my Defensive Player of the Year is a guy that a lot of people thought should have won it last year, T.J. Watt. 15 sacks last season, 2 forced fumbles, 7 pass deflections at the outside linebacker position. I think T.J. Watt, not really a hot take at this point, is the better Watt brother right now. Even though I think J.J.'s going to have a bounce back, I think T.J. Watt is going to bring home the Defensive Player of the Year. And this might be incorrect, but I tend to think this is the first time two brothers will have won the same NFL award. I'm trying to think. Now, obviously, you can say, what, Super Bowl MVP for the Manning brothers? But I'm going, you know, end-of-year annual award. There's no Aaron Rodgers. There's no Jeff Rodgers that's quarterbacking teams winning MVPs. Tom Brady does not have a brother who is winning MVPs. I think T.J. Watt's going to do something that, you know, hasn't been done before. And I think he's going to be a big role. He's going to play a big role in that Steelers defense, as he always does, and help them into the playoffs. I had them as my low seed, and he's part of the reason why. So that is my off-season award prediction list, if you will. So that takes us to the biggest question thus far. And now, obviously, what's bigger than the Super Bowl in that? Well, we can't put the cart before the horse. We got to pick week one. Week one of the NFL season. It's exciting. It's very exciting. You know, in week ones, usually, I either do really well or really poorly. Now, let's do with that information what you will. I'm not saying to go bet on my picks. In fact, I would advise you to do quite the opposite. However, we take a look at the rosters. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, pretty much the same team as last year, if not identical. Tight end position, Rob Gronkowski and O.J. Howard, with Cameron Brate factoring in there. Receiving core, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin. This time they're going to have a full season of Antonio Brown, which could be big. Could see another Brady MVP. I thought about it. Scotty Miller also trying to factor in a little bit more. We saw them sprinkle him in, and I think he'll be a little bit bigger of a role player this year. Rojo listed as the lead back on the team website right now. Leonard Fournette back there. Gio Bernard, who I think is a good fit. I think would have been a good fit, you know, in that Brady-ish sort of offense in New England. Guy who's got some hands on him. On the defensive side, name brands all around. Ndamukong Suh, as we just mentioned. Jason Pierre-Paul, an outside linebacker in this scheme. Shaq Barrett, Lavonte David, Devin White, one of the more athletic linebackers in the league. In the secondary, Antoine Winfield Jr., Sean Murphy Bunting, Carlton Davis, you know the names. You saw him in the Super Bowl. You saw him holding up that trophy. On the other side, the Dallas Cowboys, a team that you also probably know pretty much, if we're being honest. The big thing, obviously, Dak Prescott coming back. How's he going to look? You take a look at Dak Prescott's stats prior to the injury last year, and he was having quite the season. You take a look, five starts, and he started into that, you know, hurt in that last game. We're talking 68% completion percentage, which would have been a career high. He was pushing 1,900 yards, 9 touchdowns to 4 picks. It would have been a career year for him, easily. You know, 30 touchdowns the season prior was a career year as well, most ever. I think he probably would have surpassed 40, if not high 30s. The yardage would have been higher than ever before. The year before, he was at 4,900 yards, and this was the fifth game, and he was already pushing 2,000. Can he keep that, you know, track up the whole season? Of course not. But you get out to a big lead in terms of your projections and what you've accumulated the first handful of games, and it, you know, gives you a little time to catch up. Am I confident that Dak will be healthy all year this year? I hope so for Cowboy fans. I really do. Cowboy fans have a rough go of it every year, no matter what, if we're being completely honest. So the last thing you want is injuries for any team, but especially for a team like this whose fan base is just aching for the team to be good. And that's coming from a New York Giants fan. So, however, I'm not oblivious to the fact that this game is in Tampa. This is the season opener. Defending champions usually don't lose these season openers, and Tom Brady is a champion of all champions. So I think in week one, we're going to take the Tampa Bay Bucks in the first game of the season. I know it's not a hot take, but that's not what you come here for. Can't hot take everything. Give me some time. We got 18 weeks of hot takes coming. I'll get some in there. Give me Tampa Bay to defend their home turf and, you know, really impress those home fans with a pretty decent victory. This could be an interesting game. This could be a little bit of a shootout. You never know. Dallas has got that offensive talent, and they've got some pretty good, you know, impact players on that defense as well. Like the aforementioned Micah Parsons, guys like that. So let's see how it goes. I've got Tampa winning this one. Let me know what you guys got. Hope you guys are excited for the NFL season to begin. Either way, T-minus 5 days. 5 days this Thursday, we will be kicking off. Thank you for joining us on episode 110 of the Necessary Roughness Podcast. That's the end of it, folks. We are ready to get into regular season form starting next week. Presented by Last Word on Sports, as always. Hosted by yours truly, Nicholas Donatic, as always. Thank you for joining us. I hope you join us next Saturday afternoon for the next episode. We'll break down week one. We'll break down the season opener. And we'll get ready to go for the NFL season. Hope you guys are excited. I certainly am. And for another NFL season, and I'm excited to say it and blessed to say it, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.